Good morning, and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Marisa DeMarco, a reporter and producer here at KUNM. The Rio Grande looks great right now through Albuquerque. It's so full of water, you can watch the river swallow chunks of earth from the riverbank in real time. But researchers and scientists say looks can be deceiving. The river is a highly managed system. Its flows are boosted each year with stored water and water from elsewhere. And global warming has taken its toll. After a multi-year drought, water agencies warned farmers in the Middle Rio Grande Valley not to plant their fields in 2021 unless they absolutely had to. And that's just one impact. We've also seen stretches of the river go completely dry for miles in recent years. If we continue this way, local scientists say it might not be too long before we're looking at thirsty cottonwood trees, struggling wildlife, and parched ecosystems in the bosque. We want to hear from you. Have you visited the Rio Grande lately? Or did another river in the state draw you outdoors during the pandemic? Do you feel more connected to the rivers near you? Join the conversation this morning by calling 277-5866. And New Mexico may see more people moving here in the coming decades. How do we think about population growth in the state and water resources? You can tweet us too with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. And a quick note for full disclosure, I'm one of the artists behind There Must Be Other Names for the River, a song based on 50 years of flow data that's also an online art installation for the UNM Art Museum. The piece aims to bring attention to the impacts of climate change along the Rio Grande. All right, so Dagmar Llewellyn has served as a hydrologist and civil engineer in the Water Management Division of the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation Office in Albuquerque since 2010. There, she leads efforts based on the projections of climate change impacts. She also contributes her expertise to research and outreach related to water supply and demand challenges in this region. Good morning, Dagmar.
Good morning, Marisa. Thank you for having me on your show today.
Thanks for joining us. So the river looks really good right now, but how we see the river looking on any given day is not necessarily an indicator of how well it's doing overall. Can you walk us through that a little bit?
Sure. So you really said what's going on here. The Rio Grande, it is beautiful, and you can float down it and feel like you're in a fully natural system, but really it's a highly engineered system, and the amount of water that you see at any given time isn't necessarily a reflection of the overall water supply. It is a reflection somewhat of that and somewhat of all of the management decisions that the Bureau of Reclamation and other water management agencies have made, as well as sort of legal conditions that can lead to the requirements for deliveries downstream, that sort of thing. So in this case, the snowpack actually was fairly normal. So we should have had a pretty good runoff. But if you look at the main stem of the Rio Grande, the amount of water that we're actually getting out of that snowpack in New Mexico is about 40% of average. Mm. So there's a lot of things that go on between that snowpack and the actual delivery to New Mexico by Colorado. First, we had hot, dry conditions last year, not much of a monsoon, and the soil conditions are very dry, and the plants are very thirsty. And so by the time the water gets to the index gauges that determine how much water Colorado has to send downstream to New Mexico, according to the Rio Grande Compact, there's already been diminishment because of those soil conditions and plant conditions and the sort of antecedent dryness. And then, in addition to that, the structure of the Rio Grande Compact, so that's the legal system, the law of the river that says how much each state has to deliver to the next state, is the delivery requirement for Colorado is lower in years that they get lower supply to their index gauges. Mm-hmm. So it's a combination of the natural factors and the legal factors that determine how much comes into New Mexico. And then as we move through New Mexico, of course, we still have those dry soils, we still have those thirsty plants, and so more water goes to all of those things and replenishing groundwater that's been pumped to make up for past drought conditions. Right. And so by the time we get down into the Middle Rio Grande, there might not be a lot left. So given all that, why do you see water in the river now? Last year, there was a decision made by the state of New Mexico to run water down and deliver it to farmers as they were experiencing shortage, rather than bring it down to Elephant Butte for compact delivery. So that compact delivery needs to be delivered now. They're mm-hmm. in compliance. I want to be clear. The state of New Mexico is in compliance with the compact, but needs to deliver water to make up for some water that wasn't delivered last year and was used by farmers who were hurting. And so what we'll see is a pretty good flow now, running that water down to Elephant Butte, and then for the Rio Grande project, use in the Mesilla Valley and down to El Paso, as well as for compact deliveries. But then as this summer moves on, we'll see less and less water and even potentially drying in Albuquerque, which we hadn't seen in a long time.
Yeah, so let me just make sure that I understand it right. The river, the water that we see in the river, you know, naturally it comes from snow in the San Juan Mountains, right? And so if I think I understand what you're saying, it's that we had enough snow, right? We had, or we had a lot of, a decent amount of snow, but it didn't turn into river water necessarily. Only about 40% of what you would normally expect from that amount of snow actually became river water. Is that right, Dagmar?
That's right on the main stem.
Yeah. And then the reason for that is because of higher temperatures, right? Higher temperatures mean thirstier plants, drier ground. So they're kind of sucking it up right away real fast. And I think we've all seen that, like that spring in some ways is just different than, in my mind, than it used to be in my memory. It's not like this gradual seasonal shift. It's like we start getting hot days kind of right away. Is that the reason, Dagmar?
Well, certainly there are years like that. One of the other characteristics of our changing climate is that things become more variable. And we do sometimes have wet years with wet springs, but mm-hmm. recently we haven't had those conditions. It's been hot and dry, and really everything all along the way is thirsty. And then as the temperatures are warmer in the year that the water is flowing down, say this year, then more of the water goes into the atmosphere. A warmer atmosphere holds more moisture. You know, I talked on Laura's PBS program about that's how your hair dryer works. If the temperatures are hotter, then more water goes from the liquid form into the atmosphere. That's also why we talk about humidity in the sense of relative humidity, because it's dependent on temperature. And so if it's hot and dry, then that liquid moisture just goes up into the atmosphere and blows away in our spring winds.
Right. And to follow up also, you know, here in Albuquerque, when we see the river looking really big, that's often because you all are making it look big and full here in Albuquerque. But, you know, that you might not be able to keep doing that as climate change progresses, right?
Well, that's right. Now, right now, it's, you know, we're not doing it. We, the water management agencies, are not running water down the Rio Grande for appearances to make it look good. We actually are moving water downstream for legal requirements, right? And to mm-hmm. provide water to the Mesilla Valley down to El Paso, so that what we call the Rio Grande project. But you bring up a really interesting point, and there was an article that Cliff Dom from UNM published a decade ago, talking about the ways that this was the water management agencies, federal agencies, state agencies, take actions that sort of minimize the visibility of a changing climate. And, you know, of course, we do that for the best of reasons. We want to minimize the impact at any given time. So a couple of years ago, the drought was looking pretty bad. We were talking about potential drying in Albuquerque, and the Bureau of Reclamation, where I work, made a deal with the Albuquerque Bernalillo County Water Utility Authority to purchase some of the water that they had stored. This is imported water from the Colorado River Basin that's stored in Abiquiu Reservoir up on the Chama. And we purchased that water so that we could run it down the river and keep the Albuquerque Reach wet, really for environmental purposes. But what that also does is keep people from being aware of the challenges during a given year. If we're scrambling in the background to make everything look good, then people might not be aware that things are as bad as they are.
Right, right. We're going to take a call now from Michael in Albuquerque. Good morning, Michael.
Hello, good morning.
What's your question or comment for us this morning?
So I'm definitely concerned about the Earth overall. I remember the quote, act locally and think globally. And we need to think about the Rio Grande in the same way, and protecting the Rio Grande, because, you know, for the many species and plants and animals that live along the Rio Grande, and protecting the Rio Grande, the water in the Rio Grande, we can help protect those species, and which in turn will help preserve our environment and ultimately ourselves as well.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Michael. Thank you for that thought. And it does kind of tie into what Dagmar's talking about, which is that the water flows are supplemented to try and do that kind of environmental preservation. But what does it mean, Dagmar, that the temperatures are heating up and we're seeing this become more and more challenging for water managers, right?
It absolutely is becoming more and more challenging for water managers. And I think what we're seeing this year is sort of the limits to the ability of the water management agencies to shield the public from seeing what's actually happening. And, we're all praying for a good monsoon, but short of that, we may well see drying in some critical areas such as Albuquerque, where we haven't seen drying of the river before.
All right, and we're talking about climate change and the Rio Grande this morning. Join us by calling 277-5866 if you have a question or comment. Phoebe Suena is the owner of High Watermark, a company that works with tribes and pueblos on environmental policy, land acquisition, planning, and infrastructure. She's a member of San Felipe and Cochiti Pueblos. She does so many things, but one of them is that Phoebe helps Native communities and local municipalities address water resource issues, incorporating traditional and local knowledge with science-based planning and engineering. Thanks for being here with us today, Phoebe.
Good morning, Marisa, and good morning, everybody.
Good morning. So, Phoebe, you're a hydrologist. What brought you to this work?
Really, it's my love of water. There at Cochiti Pueblo, and my love of the environment. There at Cochiti Pueblo, we have a large dam called the Cochiti Dam, and that dam had impacted my community at Cochiti starting back in the 1940s and 50s when the Flood Control Act was passed, and the Army Corps of Engineers, as one of the federal agencies that has been tasked to build and engineer structures to manage water, as Dagmar was talking about earlier, and looking at managing water along the Rio Grande. And so as the bill or as the law was passed, in the interest of the public, the location of the dam was then sought after in the mid-1900s, and Cochiti was unfortunately the area that was chosen for that location. And so as I learned from my elders, my grandfathers and grandmothers about the impact of the dam on our community, not only on the river itself, but as well as on our language and traditional practices such as farming and all of the traditional aspects that are associated with farming and our way of life being impacted by the dam, I learned more and more about the evolution of the dam and where it was, the hydrology behind it, the engineering behind it, and knowing that some of the, if you will, some of the verbal agreements that the Army Corps came to the Pueblo leadership with just could not have been fulfilled for really technical and engineering reasons. One was the impact of the whole ecosystem where we had our farm fields, as well as the impact of all land is sacred, but there's some sacred areas there that are not only sacred to Cochiti, but to all the other pueblos here in the Southwest region. And so, unfortunately, that dam was put there. And what I really, really looked at was during that time, there was not anybody at the Pueblo that had the engineering background or the technical background to really question why the Army Corps of Engineers was questioning their design and the impact. And this was before NEPA, before all of the environmental laws and regulations were passed in the 1970s. And so, but again, nobody there to really understand the engineering and technical aspects that the engineers, that the engineering language. So that's where what got me into water. And also with all the recent wildfires in the area, from Cerro Grande to Las Conchas fire, and also the post-wildfire flooding issues here in the Southwest, just trying to help our communities, both tribal and non-tribal communities here in New Mexico. And that's really what got me into water and also to start High Water Mark.
Thank you, Phoebe. We're going to take a quick break and we'll come back and we'll talk about how climate change is impacting the tribal communities as well. Thanks for listening, everyone. We're talking about how global warming affects the Rio Grande this morning. The river is at least a million years old, and climate change impacts really started showing up only in the last couple of decades. So if you're thinking of this from the river's perspective, this is a sudden injury or wound. What does the river mean to you? How did you go to the river in New Mexico a lot during the pandemic? How do you think about river health? Are politicians in New Mexico talking enough about climate change and water in the state? And what do you want to hear from elected officials when it comes to water resources? Give us a call at 277-5866. Tweet us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. We're going to take a quick break.
Support comes from Escuela del Sol Montessori, offering pre-K through junior high education, empowering children to recognize their potential academically and personally for over 50 years. For more information and to schedule a virtual tour, visit escueladelsol.org.
Support comes from Canteen Brewhouse. Locally brewed beer, growlers, crowlers, six-packs, and root beer are available. Dine-in and carry-out Monday through Thursday, 2 to 9, Friday and Saturday, noon to 10, and Sunday, noon to 9. CanteenBrewhouse.com.
She's one of the most revered pianists of our time, and Marta Argerich is notorious for canceling concerts at the last moment, depending on how she's feeling. Well, she was thrilled to take part in a live broadcast this past New Year's Eve, and we've got it for you. I'm Fred Child. Join me for the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco. We're talking about the Rio Grande and global warming this morning. We're going to take a quick call from Rich Schrader in Santa Fe. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning.
Good morning, Rich. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you. I just wanted to...
I'm sorry. I don't know. Can you turn him up a little bit?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, there we go. Thanks. We got you now, Rich.
Okay. Okay, great. Good morning. I just wanted to make a comment, just kind of following up on what Phoebe Sweeney just said about holes, about thinking about this question that was posed, does the river have a right to have water? And the river is really kind of like it's part of us. We are the river. Our bodies are mostly water, right? So how can we think about the river and us as a whole and what we can do across our landscapes? Because what I see as a watershed scientist with RiverSource and doing assessment with youth and communities around the state for 23 years, we need to think of us, what we can do everywhere in our neighborhoods to improve our watershed health. Because the water situation in our rivers, yeah, it's climate and it's law, it's complex. But it's also because our watersheds are diminished. We haven't taken care of them for a long time, like we used to. So, and with new science too, but also combining that with traditional knowledge. So, just want to appreciate the people on the call here, and ask everybody to think of us as wholes. as we are the river. So, yeah, of course, the water, the river deserves to have water in it. But we're going to see it dry potentially in Albuquerque. So what do we do about that?
Yeah, and I think it, I mean, we've seen patches of it dry near Albuquerque, but I don't know if we've seen it as dry as it might be this year. Is that right, Dagmar?
It certainly has dried in Albuquerque before, and there's reason to believe that there was drying throughout the river, you know, throughout its several million year history, because there weren't dams upstream that stored the spring snowmelt runoff and then ran it down later in the year. And the species in the river are to some degree adapted to those kinds of conditions, living in isolated pools, that sort of thing. So we talk a lot about the Rio Grande silvery minnow, and research has found that it can survive 36 degrees Celsius for 72 hours, something like that, which is something that gave it a competitive advantage against other species in past climates. So kind of an aside, first I wanted to say, Rich, thank you so much for your call. Nice to hear your voice. And I think that you bring up a really important point about us being, as a community, really connected to the river. And we've talked a lot about how the future of the river needs to be discussed and considered as a community conversation from the whole community, rather than just from the water management agencies. And I think that's happening. I think this is a very engaged community. I think that the artwork that Marisa is part of is key to that, and I think shows like this are key to that, and the work that Rich Schrader does with youth is also part of that. And I see a lot of that in this community, and it's very encouraging.
All right. Thank you, Dagmar. Just returning now to Phoebe Swina, we were talking about the impact of the dam on the Pueblo of Cochiti. But can you also tell us about climate change and what do lower flows mean for your community in terms of being able to plant farms, to your daily life?
Thank you for that question. And also, good morning, Rich. I also want to incorporate some of Rich's comments related to the river itself and our connection to that river. As you heard earlier, I'm from the Pueblos, and our way of life is interdependent upon our environment. We are part of our landscape, and as many of the Pueblos here in New Mexico, we were blessed that we were actually within some of our lands when the Europeans came. So we are inherently connected to where the locations of many of the current Pueblos are located. And one of those, as being from Cochiti and San Felipe Pueblo, is being directly connected to the river, with the river running right through our communities, within, you know, hop, foot, and jump over to the river. But to your point is, to your question, Marisa, is we, being that inherently connected to the river also worries me, because as climate changes and we see these extreme highs and extreme lows in terms of climate change, that's really what climate change is resulting in, and that we're going to see in a year, 10 years, 20 years from now. And as a Pueblo mother, I have two kids, thinking about them and the future generations, that's where I'm worried about. What are they going to have to manage? What are they going to have to think about? What are they going to have to live through? We just lived through a really, really extreme period of time in going through the pandemic. So that really worries me as we look at the river and our in-depth connection to, you know, I hope that the river continues to flow. I hope that, because that is, as was mentioned earlier, millions of years, the river was there. And so in essence, the river in itself, especially the Middle Rio Grande and the Rio Grande River, is alive. When we talk about a river, we talk about the health of the river. if we're talking about the health of something, we're actually talking about a living being. And so how do we, you know, as Pueblo people, we were raised to think about the river in that context, or the mountains and the environment in that context. And it's through modern science that I think now science is now catching up to the way indigenous people view the landscape and are interconnected with the landscape and understand the landscape. And so as we move forward, you know, for climate change, we're going to see highs and we're going to see lows. And so how do we prepare? How do we teach our youth? How do we make sure and revitalize those stories? Because Pueblo people have been in this New Mexico landscape since time immemorial. We have a number of data points. We have an encyclopedia that goes back thousands of years of data and information, expertise, and knowledge. We are the first hydrologists in this landscape. So it's upon us living today, the mothers, the grandfathers, the aunties, uncles, to help impart that knowledge and wisdom and expertise through our native language to our youth so that they can help manage and help steward. I really don't like the word manage, but rather steward and live within and interdependent with our environment, including the river.
All right. Thank you, Phoebe. We're talking about the Rio Grande and climate change this morning. You can call in if you want to join the conversation, 277-5866. As we're mentioning, this is a highly managed system. And who should have a say in how the Rio Grande is managed? As we see lower flows in the river and farmers are warned against planting crops, who has a seat at the decision-making table? We have a tweet here that came in. You can always tweet us with the hashtag Let's Talk NM. This comment comes from someone whose name is also Marissa. What are our politicians and the water authority managers doing to prioritize indigenous voices and caretaking of our water and environment? Those voices will allow us to heal the water and ourselves. I'm going to take a call now from Margaret in Albuquerque. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning. I want to bring into the conversation another issue, which is the proposed development called Santa Lena for the west side. It's supposed to be over 20 square miles. It's going to be one of the largest, if it happens, developments ever in the west. And just the impact that those kinds of things continue to have, including the impact of climate change on the water situation in New Mexico in general. We already, as you guys are discussing, have a water system in our state very affected by natural resources and natural changes in climate, well, some of them man-made. And yet we are still considering impacting that whole water system additionally with continued man-made impact, such as a development like Santa Lena, which one of the first things Santa Lena did, the developers who were trying to push through that development, was to ask for waivers regarding normal requirements pertaining to water when considering that kind of development, asking for waivers of having to meet the normal kinds of requirements that a developer has to meet when planning those kinds of development. And that's a big red flag. Why are we allowing this kind of thing to continue when we already have natural impacts that we have to contend with? And I want to make sure people are aware and do their research to look up, because there are decisions being made. Currently, this is a project that was planned starting back in 2016, 2017, and it's still pushing for approval. And I think water needs to be a bigger issue for everybody when looking at those kinds of things. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret. Laura Paskus is a longtime environment reporter since 2002, based in Albuquerque. She produces a monthly series for New Mexico PBS called Our Land, New Mexico's Environmental Past, Present, and Future. She also wrote a book that you can find on shelves now. It's called At the Precipice, New Mexico's Changing Climate. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Marisa. Thanks for having me along with Dagmar and Phoebe this morning.
Yeah, thanks for being here. In your work as a journalist, you've been following climate change impacts on the Rio Grande a long time. When did you first start reporting on this?
Back in 2002. Actually, one of my very first stories as a journalist was about the fact that the river had dried south of Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm. So what's the story overall that you've been trying to tell us about this river?
I think that I have been so shocked that that the Rio Grande does so often dry in the summer during irrigation season in particular, that I wanted to learn more about that just for myself. And so as a reporter, kind of driven by that curiosity and all that I was learning from various people. And so it's really a story that I've covered now for almost 20 years. And have really seen a lot change over the years in terms of, like, that first story that I did back in 2002 at the time. You know, I was watching the USGS gauges and seeing that the river was drying and calling some of the federal agencies to find out what was going on. And, you know, back at that point during the George W. Bush administration, the Fish and Wildlife Service was actually telling me, political leadership at the Fish and Wildlife Service was telling me, oh, those gauges are faulty. It's the river's not actually dry. Mm. And, you know, to see over the years how different federal and local and state agencies have started working together more and more and more in terms of restoration work and working together, like Dagmar was talking about, the agreement to keep water in the Albuquerque stretch a few years ago. Like, seeing all those things happening is really exciting, and a lot has changed. But the thing that hasn't changed is the river continues to dry, and we continue to see warmer and warmer conditions. And as scientists keep telling us over and over again, it's going to get warmer, and for an already arid region like the U.S. Southwest, warming means drying. And so, you know, we as New Mexicans really need to be thinking about what it means for us to have this river through our state. Very few of us would live here if we didn't have the Rio Grande here. And so, yeah, so it's been an evolving story. But for me, the frustrating thing has been watching how more and more of the river dries each year, and how we have more of these problems to look ahead to into the future.
So, Laura, Phoebe pointed out to us last week that there's this river in New Zealand that was granted personhood just a few years ago in 2017, and that status actually protects that river there. There was an idea here discussed in the state legislature and with state officials about whether the Rio Grande has rights to its own water. Can you tell us what that was like and where that conversation is now?
Sure. So, you know, probably 10 years ago, there was a fairly robust discussion happening about environmental flows for the Rio Grande, for New Mexico's rivers. And I think, you know, a lot of people are surprised, I think, when sort of confronted with the knowledge that our rivers here in New Mexico don't have any rights to their own water. Mm-hmm. The only thing that keeps water moving through our rivers is, you know, oftentimes in the Middle Rio Grande in the past, the only thing that kept water moving was necessary federal compliance with the Endangered Species Act to keep water moving for the endangered silvery minnow and the southwestern willow flycatcher. So New Mexico's rivers don't, you know, technically, legally, you could often dry the rivers. We don't want to do that, but I think right now it's a hard time for people to have this discussion again, to say we should be enacting policy or passing bills to ensure that rivers do have rights to their own water. It would be really easy to say now is not the time. Look at all the problems mm-hmm. we're having. Look how hard it is to get water to farmers. Look how hard it is to get compact delivery water downstream to Texas. But none of those things are ever going to be easier. And our rivers are never going to be in better shape. You know, wildlife, without our intervention and our respect for wildlife and rivers, those conditions will only be diminished over the years. So I know it's a hard conversation. I know it's complicated, but it's only going to be harder and more complicated in the future.
So if you're listening, we want to hear from you too. What do you think of this idea of the river having a right to its own water? Call us at 2775866 or tweet us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. We're talking climate change impacts on the Rio Grande. This is Let's Talk New Mexico, and I'm Marisa DeMarco. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
When a crime occurs, you call the police. They come, interview victims, and collect evidence. Targets of crime don't typically see the day-to-day process of law enforcement. There's paperwork, dead ends, and following hunches. For tribal members, there are added jurisdiction complications. It's crime from the police perspective on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, this week on Latino USA. A young woman whose family is undocumented searches for answers about why her family isn't moving forward, being stuck, and being undocumented.
In all our years of living together, we have never spoken openly about our hardships as an immigrant family.
That's this week on Latino USA.
That's Latino USA, Monday mornings at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Marisa DeMarco, and today we're talking about water resources, global warming, and river health. New Mexico may see more people moving here in the coming decades. How do we think about population growth in the state and limited water resources that are growing more scarce because of global warming? Call 2775866 and join this conversation. You can also tweet us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. We're going to take a call right now from Denise in Santa Fe. Good morning, Denise.
Hi, this is Denise Forica. Great panel. I'm enjoying this very much. And Laura Paskus's question, should rivers have rights? Yes, they should. New Mexico is the only state in the West that doesn't have an in-stream flow law, meaning a statutory mechanism to protect flows in the river. But more importantly, maybe equally importantly, there's not a statutory mission for the state engineer and the Interstate Stream Commission to protect ecological values in our rivers. This is the time that we need it. I'd love to hear some comments from the panelists about what other states and tribal governments are doing to protect environmental flows that we could learn from. And what, if anything, could our members of Congress do to help in protecting the environmental values in our rivers? Thank you.
All right, so a question for the panel from Denise about what other governments are doing to protect rivers and how could Congress potentially help out with this. I'm going to throw this one first to Laura.
So thanks for calling in, Denise. That's a great point about the statutory obligation of the state's water management agencies, the water agencies, to consider rivers and the environment as part of their mission as well. So I am not super familiar with a lot of the current work that other states are doing, but there is a lot that the federal delegation could be doing. In part, we need to be having some serious conversations about how we store water on the Rio Grande. Should we be storing so much water, or trying to store so much water when it's available down in Elephant Butte Reservoir with its extremely high evaporation rates and rising temperatures? What do we need to be looking at in terms of reauthorizing or changing the authorization for storage issues on maybe some of the reservoirs higher up in the watershed? And that would require congressional action. There's also so much that our state legislators could be doing, not just on the environmental flows issue, but in terms of water planning and ensuring that water agencies in the state are funded at adequate levels, have a mandate to be incorporating climate change and future planning into everything that they're doing, and to be fully staffed and fully resourced. And the state legislature has a lot of work ahead of it. As excited as I am personally about Melanie Stansberry's election to Congress right now, I think it's a bummer that she won't be in the state legislature anymore. She was a real leader on water issues. So hopefully some of the other legislators who are working on those issues will bump up their work and that leadership as well.
So Phoebe, before you answer this question from Denise about how different governments are helping to address this issue, I wanted to ask you, you know, we've been talking about how there's a complicated system of management and compacts and laws governing the river and river water. Do tribal governments in New Mexico have a voice in water management, Phoebe?
Thank you for that question, and I also want to thank the caller for her question as well. It is complicated. Right now in New Mexico, the Pueblos don't have a statutory or legal mechanism to be at the decision-making table. The way the current state framework is, the state laws, rules, and regulations, there is what we call the State Tribal Collaboration Act, and that act is in place at the state level to ensure collaboration between the state government and different departments and agencies so that they can ensure collaboration. But collaboration is not at the decision-making table. Same thing at the federal level. We have Section 106 consultation regulations and laws in place, but as I said, is that's consultation. That's not at the decision-making table, and or within the decision-making framework. Often we see either at the federal or state level, and even at the local level, because especially in local governments, whether we talk about county governments or town or city governments, there's no legal or ordinance or mechanism. If there is one, it's very rare that we'll find that to engage the tribes and get their input, not only consultation, but even at the decision-making table. And so often what we've seen, especially over the previous 4 years under the federal administration, there was a lot of what we call or has been termed the check the box interaction. Mm-hmm. So it's dear tribal leader letter, which is very general to a Pueblo governor or one of the presidents of the Navajo Nation or the Apache Nations. And then they say, okay, check the box. I sent the letter. And if there's a letter back from those governments, tribal governments, then it's like, okay, great. I've been on a number of calls where the and meetings where the Pueblo or tribal leadership comes with real, very big concerns, and they say, okay, thank you for your input. We're gonna drop the bill tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little bit disheartening at times, but again, we have to keep working at this. We have to keep improving. We have to keep trying to see how we look at right now as Pueblo people. We were here under the Spanish government rule, then the Mexican government rule, and now we're here under the U.S. government framework. So we have to keep learning and trying to figure out how we do get our input in the decision-making framework as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Phoebe. Dagmar.
So I will just note I have a personal connection to the Whanganui River in New Zealand and paddled it right before its personhood and have followed that story closely. And just wanted to point out that personhood for that river was
was created as a way to incorporate indigenous voices and indigenous knowledge on that river. And so these two issues are intimately connected. The flows in the river, the life of the river, and the indigenous knowledge about that. What Denise was calling about really was about a legal change at the state level, and the ways that this has been playing out in this state over time has been about giving a designation of beneficial use for flows in the water in the river. But this other model is also one that can be considered locally, a way of incorporating indigenous voices and indigenous knowledge about the river into the ways that it's managed, and in the case of the Whanganui River, that gave a distinct voice to the indigenous community that lives along the river in the management of the river.
All right. Thank you, Dagmar. We have a tweet also from Tucker Colvin. He says, you may have mentioned this before I tune in, but I think part of the conversation is restructuring or replacing the prior appropriation system of assigning water rights. Some people feel like they need to irrigate or use water just to keep their water rights. Okay, so folks feel like they have to use the water so that they can preserve their water rights, is what Tucker is talking about. Is this something that you all are thinking about, Phoebe?
Thank you so much. And I think this brings up another key component that the current framework that the state engineer and the Interstate Stream Commission don't have in their water management framework is this discussion about water quality. So I wanted to go back a little bit. So states or tribes have a certain potential designation called treatment as a state in terms of water quality, but not water quantity, right? So there's this kind of division between how we talk about water management in terms of water quantity versus how we talk about water management in terms of water quality. Well, I think we can all agree that they're interdependent and that there's overlap and that we should be talking about both when we're talking about each component. So to the caller's question is, yes, so the current framework that we have in terms of water management is a really simplified framework. And the way I talk to engineers about this is in arithmetic, we have 1 + 1 = 2. That's a real, simplified, everybody, out there learns that in first or second grade. But our complexity that we have in terms of water and how we think about water is more like very complicated differential equations and models. And so if we're talking that the water, as we talk about a water concept and water stewardship, it's a very complicated interdependent system, but we're managing it and divvying out water rights on a 1 + 1 = 2 framework. And it doesn't take into account all the complexities, including in this framework, as the caller mentioned or the tweeter mentioned, is we have to use the water right because we might lose it, use it or lose it. So that's a very simplistic framework for a very complicated system when there is right now in the current framework not an ability to say, okay, I'm not going to irrigate this year because I don't need that crop, but I don't want to lose my water right. There's not that flexibility. Like, what if we're in this drought for, a decade?
Mm-hmm.
There's not that flexibility in the current regulatory and water management system.
So we're heading towards the end of the hour, and I want to jump in talking about solutions and what things people can do to help if they're hearing this conversation and feeling concerned about the Rio Grande. We have a question from Jenny via Twitter. She's asking, people are xeriscaping with rock, but doesn't that raise temperatures? Maybe we should educate folks about using native plants instead. This saves water and creates habitat. Would that help the river, is what she's asking. Dagmar, I'm going to throw that one to you.
Sure. Absolutely. Native landscaping would help decrease the water usage within the urban environment. And I think a lot of that is happening around our community and certainly up in Santa Fe as well. Rock can be part of the landscape and looks nice as part of the landscape, but when the sun shines on it, it does collect heat, as opposed to the cool moisture that comes from the transpiring of water by plants. And so that is all true.
Great. Laura, what do you think people can do as we're thinking about this big question about global warming and the Rio Grande?
Yeah, so individual actions do matter in terms of basically reminding us to be connected to our watershed, but there needs to be sort of large-scale systematic and system-wide changes. And so that means that all of us need to be reminding local lawmakers, state politicians, federal delegations, that these issues are really important. And like the caller was talking about Santa Lena earlier, you know, any sorts of land development issues need to also be water issues. We can't be talking about water and land separately anymore. And so I think keeping pressure on elected officials during campaign season, making sure that people are asking questions about water and the environment and climate change, and continuing to keep that conversation going throughout someone's entire administration or tenure.
Phoebe, we've got just about a minute left, but if you could offer just some quick words on what you think folks can do to help.
Thank you so much. Yeah, and I just want to echo what Laura said, and everybody on an individual level, as we're educated and brought up, we are all interdependently connected. And so every little thing that every individual does is important to the grand, to the whole picture of not just in New Mexico, but globally. As the caller said, act locally, think globally. And so I think each decision we make on a daily basis, I made this analogy last week, is, you know, think about what you put down in your drain, in your sink. Those little things, do you turn off the water while you brush your teeth? Those little things do end up making a big difference if a million people do that. And so you do contribute just as, you know, a combination of all of the local individual actions.
All right, we're coming to the end of the hour today. Thank you for joining us today on Let's Talk New Mexico. Dagmar Llewellyn, Laura Paskus, and Phoebe Suena. Thanks, everyone. If you missed any of our program or if you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted to our website, KUNM.org, where you can also find previous shows. Thanks to Marino Spencer, our engineer today. Megan Kamrick screened your calls. And Ty Bannerman is our executive producer. I'm Marisa DeMarco. This is KUNM.